Chapter 7. Peter traced a fingernail along the alligator skin patterns left behind by the powdered non-dairy creamer inside his styrofoam coffee cup. He checked the clock, the only bright spot on the dark paneling of the jury room wall. 3:26. 4 minutes until the nerve-wracking questioning resumed. Refill? Larry, the retired postman, held a glass coffee pot inches from Peter's cup. Nah, thanks. I'm jittery enough. You sure? It's free. Larry grinned like a little kid on Santa's lap. He tilted the carafe as if to pour anyway. Yeah, I'm sure. Thanks. He forced a smile. Right then, he wanted to be left alone. Tough to do, given the room's cramped quarters. 2 dozen people squeezed around a table built for 10 in a room too cramped with 6. The aroma of coffee competed with cologne, sweat, and whatever previous juries had ground into the carpet for the past 2 decades, and none of the windows opened. This case is a good one, eh? A young alternate, Jason, said from the far end of a black table filling most of the long, narrow room. I hope I get on the jury. Me too, said Cody Davis, a broad-shouldered man in his late 30s. I need the $35 a day. Our lumber mill's been shut down for 8 months. Not to be pessimistic, but I bet all you get is $35, said Sheila Kane, a petite, bookish woman sitting across from Peter. With her loud, nasal voice, she didn't so much speak as honk. That's a public defender in there. This case won't last long. They'll cut a deal, and we'll be back to our jobs in the morning. She retucked thick white bra straps under the shoulders of her knit pullover. I don't think we should be discussing the case, said someone to Peter's left. Carlos Rodriguez, the soft-spoken Latino. What else are we supposed to talk about? Alex, a tall juror with the build of a former defensive lineman, stood and walked to the window. A Property of Oregon Ducks t-shirt lapped over his generous belly and hung loose over faded, torn jeans. He arched his back until it cracked, then stared outside with folded arms. Let's get going. This is boring. Ah, the impatience of youth. Larry cackled like an old witch. He set the coffee pot back onto the warmer. If young men weren't so impetuous, we wouldn't have murders like these. Peter nearly dropped his empty cup, then righted it. What do you mean by that? Larry stirred his coffee. They said it was a very violent murder. That means anger. Someone flying off the handle, letting his animal nature take over. Carlos shook his head. You shouldn't be discussing the case. The judge said so. I'm not discussing the case, Larry said. I'm simply making an observation about the human condition, the psyche of the human male. His blue eyes held eye contact with Alex, Carlos, then Peter. Peter's throat constricted. He needed water. We don't know if the killer is male, Carlos said. Only that the defendant is. We don't know anything about the killer, really. Oh, we can be sure he's male. Larry cast a wicked grin at Peter. Violent murderers are almost always male. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Robertson? Larry's intense stare froze him, like a fugitive trapped in searchlights. After several seconds, he tore his gaze away to the floor. I wouldn't know. Well, anyway, we'll know much more about the killer soon, Carlos said. Peter squeezed his eyes shut. Painful images flashed through his head. Cars crashing, tire irons swinging, blood flying. Nightmarish images. The door to the jury room opened. A fit, balding man with an expressionless face stepped into the room, closing the door behind him. The brass-colored nameplate pinned to the tan shirt of his uniform read, J. Williams, Bailiff. Okay, we're going back in, he said. Please take the same seats you had before. If you need assistance, please ask me. Any questions? The jurors filed back into the courtroom. Peter took his seat at the far end of the front row, furthest from the attorneys, but closest to the watchful eye of Judge Green. Christine Nielsen, the pretty brunette, sat in the row behind him, 2 seats to his left. A handful of spectators sat scattered around the gallery. The defense attorney, Brenda Connolly, stood and pressed her beige skirt against her long, thin legs. The wrinkles in the fabric remained. Peter guessed her age at somewhere around 30, maybe younger. Nearly 6 feet tall, she wore comfortable, low-heeled shoes. The hue of her shoulder-length hair matched her skirt. Her dark eyebrows seemed out of place among her otherwise fair coloring. She clasped her hands together, and for a moment they stopped shaking. "Ladies and gentlemen," she said, "I'm interested in your past experience with serious crime, or other violence, whether or not criminal charges were involved." She glanced sideways at the judge, who waved her hand as if to say, "Move this along now." Connolly rubbed her hands together as if molding clay, and stole occasional peeks at various distractions around the room, the clock ticking on the wall, coughing clerks, and the whispering DA. Have any of you been the victim of a serious crime? Assault, robbery, theft, that sort of thing? A half dozen jurors raised their hands. Ms. Richmond, what crime was committed against you? Dolores shifted in her seat next to Larry. As a young girl, her voice trailed off. She looked down at her feet, then raised her head again. Her lips quivered. She blinked a few times. I was attacked. Attacked in what way, Ms. Richmond? Beaten? Mugged? Dolores blinked again and paused for several seconds. I was raped. All background noise in the room evaporated, as if the entire room sucked in a huge breath and held it. The brunette, Christine, fixed Dolores with an alarmed stare. Connolly pursed her lips and rubbed her hands together much more slowly, as if washing them. Dolores's gaze dropped to her fingers intertwined on her lap. I'm very sorry, Connolly said. If this is too difficult for you. No, dear, I'm fine. Dolores's mouth drew a firm line across her pudgy, pale face. It was a long time ago. Very well, Connolly said. Was the perpetrator ever brought to justice? I'm afraid not. You see, the man who raped me was my uncle. The family didn't want a scandal. We moved here from Eastern Oregon, and I never saw him again. All matter of fact now. Do you still feel angry toward this man who did this terrible thing to you? No, Dolores drew out the word. I was so young at the time. At first, I felt dirty, like I had done something wrong. I don't think about it much now. When I do, I'm more sad than angry. Peter wrinkled his brow. As guilty as he felt about beating and leaving his attacker on that remote country road, nothing beat rape. To be violated in such a cruel way, and then forced to live with that memory, seemed to be the most horrible fate. He felt sorry for Dolores. Thank you for sharing that painful story, Miss Richmond. I won't disturb your memory of this any further. Connolly took a few steps to her right and paused in her hand rubbing. Mr. Rodriguez, what crime was committed against you? I was mugged. Peter strained to hear Rodriguez's soft voice at the far end of the jury box behind Larry. Young guy, hit me on the head, took my wallet, and got away. The thief robbed him of $120 cash and used his credit cards to finance a madcap spending spree. My credit rating really suffered. I almost couldn't refinance my house. A rap on the head. Another image popped into his head. A black rod smashing onto the skull of his attacker. Blood pouring down the man's neck. Ugh. He sucked in a deep breath, let it ease back out, did it again. It helped calm him. After questioning a few more jurors, Connolly stepped back and addressed the entire pool. Have any of you been in a relationship in which you have felt jilted? By that I mean, you're in the relationship and think things are fine. Then, out of the blue, your partner breaks it off and takes up with another. Several hands went up, including Christine's. Peter hesitated. Things had been far from fine. Marcia's departure was hardly out of the blue. His hand twitched, rose a few inches off his knee, stopped. If he raised his hand, the defense attorney would ask him questions about the circumstances of their breakup, about that night, a night he did not want to remember. His hand dropped back onto his knee, his first lie under oath. The next one, he feared, would come all too soon.